originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Pena and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and thanks for joining us on the show Trainers Listen To, Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Happy to have you with us on Sirius 219, XM 206, and all of you tuning in worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. As we get set to visit with another of racing's top trainers, we bring you this show every week, and we have the opportunity to visit with so many of the people that make our sport a success, and we bring you the stories behind those individuals, and couldn't be happier to have you with us on this Wednesday evening here tonight. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Pontiff of the Pick Four. We are in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, and JT, we've been doing this program a very long time, and tonight's guest is making a repeat appearance on this show, and he probably doesn't even remember the first time he joined us, because it was all the way back in 2012 when this show was still referred to as the Final Furlong Show, and it was still being aired on what we used to call HRRN Live. How about that for a throwback Thursday on a Wednesday afternoon?
Yeah, that's crazy. I remember those days. That was a long time ago, and our guest has certainly had tremendous success since that show. Maybe we catapulted him into the spotlight.
I was going to bring that up to him. After he appeared on this program, he went on to make appearances in a couple of Kentucky Derbies. He's been a regular in the Breeders' Cup. As a matter of fact, he actually saddled a third-place finisher in the Breeders' Cup Sprint the following year after he joined us initially on this show in 2012. He's a native of Fort Smith, Arkansas, who grew up watching quarter horses at, of all places, Blue Ribbon Downs in Oklahoma. One day, he watched Dust Commander and Don Combs win the Kentucky Derby. Then a friend took him to Oaklawn Park, and he's been hooked on thoroughbreds ever since. He's Ron Moquette, and he's with us now on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Ron, welcome, my friend. Happy New Year.
Same to you guys.
Yeah, happy to have you on board. How about that little intro? And I guess, is it true what Jude said? Is it the reason that you've all of a sudden found this great success over the past few years is because you came on this program?
I'd say that has to be the main key.
Such a gracious guest.
You know,
the timeline doesn't lie. You know, you can't argue with the facts.
That was a show. You kicked it off. At that point, we were still interviewing trainers for a half hour, not the full hour. And you were on the first half of the program. Doug O'Neill was on the second half, and Doug had just won the Kentucky Derby that year in 2012. So it was a really special show.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And it's amazing how stuff like that gets paired up, and you see what happens after. Since we've been doing some of the trainers over again for the hour, it's really been intriguing that in a very short period of time, really, because that's not that long ago, but in a short period of time, some of them have enjoyed tremendous success.
Well, Doug is actually stabled at Oaklawn this year for the first time, so this is kind of an inaugural deal for him to come here. And it's funny, you just mentioned his name, and I just saw one of his horses gallop by, so that's pretty neat.
Yeah, you are at Oaklawn now. You'll be there for this entire meet. You've been going to Oaklawn for a very long time, Ron. And you told us before we started the show that it was when they open the doors on Friday, they're expecting the temperatures to be right around 19 degrees. Just for the record, it's going to be 78 degrees at Gulfstream in Fort Lauderdale on Friday. Any regrets about going back to Oaklawn?
Never. I don't blame the guys that go there, and everybody has their own reasons for going to different spots. But, the weather is something you hurdle here for sure. I mean, but the quality of racing is really good. And if you like to to know that there's a fan base out there following you. You come to Hot Springs because these people load up the grandstands, and I've been to Gulfstream, and they offer great racing. There's some premier trainers, but it's like, you know, not a whole lot of people see the races, and here it's like whenever I grew up in the sport, you went to the races and everyone was there, and they were there because they were a fan, not because there was a shopping center there or there was a casino there. They're there because they like horse racing, and that fuels me, that gives me energy, and that's one of the reasons I come here.
Well, it's such a great place to go to visit. People, you know, every year go for a few days. It's kind of like Keeneland in that respect, where it's not around for a long time, and the local fans really embrace it, and they'll drive for hours to get there. And you're from Fort Smith, which isn't tremendously far away, so it's a little bit better for you. But it's so great to come home, isn't it, to see all the people that you know and you grew up with, and that's always a thrill for me, like when I go back to Santa Anita where I trained. And for you, it's got to be great to go to Oaklawn. It's just it's so comfortable.
Oh, yeah, it is. You know, they tell everyone, they take ownership of whoever comes through here. You could saddle one horse in Oaklawn, don't you? The fan base. They, we always have arguments about whoever's got the best horses. And if Bob Baffert sends in American Pharoah, well, that's Oaklawn's horse. You know, I mean, I'm sure that Santa Anita, where he trained the most of the time, and all the other places, you know, but for whatever reason, everyone here thinks they own American Pharoah. And that's a neat deal. And if you've been coming here for a while, these guys follow you. And the interesting thing about Hot Springs in general, you said this is that kind of town that supports or likes racing. The first year I moved to come to Thoroughbred Track, I lived in a tack room. And for about a year, I stayed in a tack room. And then I got up a little bit more on my feet, and I moved in to an apartment. And whenever I was in an apartment at Louisville, they said, "You're with the track." I said, "Well, I was with the track." And they said, "Okay, that's, instead of 700, it's 900. That's how much it was a month. And then whenever I went to Hot Springs, I said, I tried to rent a place, and it was like right there by the lake, and it was a beautiful house. And I said, "I just want to let you know I'm with the track." And they said, "Well, instead of $1,000, it's $500. they want you there. And that's a neat deal that you get kind of used to.
Ron, you mentioned the quality of racing at Oaklawn, and the racing has improved significantly each and every year. And you mentioned the name Bob Baffert. The success that Bob has had when he brings horses to Oaklawn is unprecedented. He's won the Rebel Stakes on 6 different occasions, including 3 consecutive years in 10, 11, and 12. Came back and did it again in 14, 15, and 16. Put that in perspective. What Bob has been able to accomplish when he comes to Oaklawn, how incredible is that?
It's downright unfair. We joke around, and trust me, anything that I ever play around with, like with Bob or with these guys, is out of pure respect and of what they've done. They've earned their position they have and the success they've had. But I always joke around. I got up one day at I had a horse named Far Right that I thought was a good shot to win the Arkansas Derby. And the Kentucky Derby would be, you know, huge. But for me to win the Arkansas Derby, being from Arkansas, is going to be a big deal for me. And I first thing I did when I looked through the Rebel in the Southwest was look through the kind of horses that may come. And you got to check out Bob Baffert because he just pretty much owns it. And so I checked him, and I was like, he's got a couple horses. But this one hadn't run in 5 months. He's probably not. He's probably got an injury, or maybe he's not the same or whatever. And Bob just comes over and beats us to death with a little horse named American Pharoah. So I was, you know, and then the next year I'm sick and I'm thinking we're going to win the Rebel anyway. So I was sick as a dog, and I was getting fluids so I could make the race. And I come over and I think we were the favorite that day with the horse. Bob just threw something on the plane that just come over here and won, and we run second. I was joking around with everybody afterwards. Well, I don't think it was a joke originally. I told them that I wasn't a big fan of Baffert because he always come over and took my money. But, sick people don't need to be interviewed, I don't think. But he was he's always had some success. And you look at it, and when you say the numbers, it's one thing. But when you walk through there and they do a little deal where they put the stakes winners up, the pictures all over the walls down in the racing office and to the horse bookkeepers. And everywhere you look, there's a different Baffert horse that you forgot, you know. The Factor went in the Southwest, and that super 99, and then one year was going to try to win the Fantasy with a filly named Amy's Deanie, and he just shipped a filly that just broke her maiden, her last out, I think, named Mama Kimbo. She come in there and she run like a 98 buyer speed figure in her second out and won the Fantasy. So he's had so much success, and the fans love him, and I respect him and want to beat him, but I kind of hope he decides to run some other places every now and then.
Ron Moquette, our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Far Right was a really and is a really nice horse, and you mentioned running second to American Pharoah in the Arkansas Derby. When you see what American Pharoah ended up accomplishing in his career, do you now say, okay, we ran second to American Pharoah? Do you take some pride in that, or are you still, does it kind of rub you the wrong way that you got beat?
No, I mean, trust, as a trainer, you're always thinking the positive. You think you can win, and maybe this horse will get caught in a speed duel and set it up for you to come catch him on the wire. I knew that he was an awesome horse, but I kept thinking maybe that it could work out to where we'd win, and then afterwards we didn't win, and that's, you know, that's okay. He ran his best race, and our horse did, and we ran into a better horse. It is a constant reminder how second place gets forgotten. You look around and there's on every condition book, there's a picture of American Pharoah, and there's a little red horse in the back, you know, but there's a wind picture, or there's something of, there's a statue of bronze of American Pharoah. And luckily, you know, we were too far out of it to be in that bronze. So, you realize that second is not where you want to be. I mean, imagine the third place finisher would argue that. But if you think you can win, and then you get the constant reminders here that you didn't. But I take into account and give credit to that horse for running his best race against what turned out to be a horse of a lifetime. So.
Yeah, you that's got to make you feel somewhat good. I mean, your horse acquitted himself quite well in that race, and you run against a Triple Crown winner. You can't really be mad after the fact, right?
No. Afterwards, I'm sure in 5 years I'll sit back and think. But I was still trying to hope that somebody went with him and caused him to go too fast or whatever. So yeah, I am very, very proud of. That we were second to American Pharoah the year he won the Arkansas Derby. But I tell you, when you run against those kind of horses and you don't realize right off the bat that they're super great horses, you're trying to beat them. You know, sometimes it could cost your career. You know, you ask your horse for everything he's got and he gives you everything he's got. And then, he kind of, after that, it's hard to rebound and get them to go back and try again because of the futile effort they give last time, you know.
Ron, what's the story behind Far Right? How did he come into your barn? And take us through some of the early days of Far Right.
Far Right, I watched him run at Keeneland and his first out. The first out, he got the guy that owned him was a guy named John Judiski. And he's a dentist, an equine dentist, but he's a very good horseman from Lexington. And he's got a great eye for finding inexpensive horses that can run. And never bought a horse off of him, never. But I did see this horse run second to a horse of Asmussen that he knew was a nice horse. So that day he'd gotten loose in the pack or loose in the post parade and ran around, and I thought that they would scratch him, but he still ran second. So that impressed me a little bit. So we reached out to try to get a deal done and couldn't get a deal done. And then later Harry was looking for a horse, and this horse was still on the radar, and Harry bought him, and after his first out with us, he'd run one more out, and he was second. But after his first out with us, he ran huge, and the phone rang. I mean, from really prominent, smart people that buy horses was trying to buy him for a large profit from what we give. And luckily, Harry's a sportsman, and he decided to sell a piece and retain him and let him stay in my barn. But it started from John Judiski buying him for, I think it was $1,000 or $1,200 as a yearling, a little horse by Notional, who I don't even know where he stands anymore, but he was kind of a freak deal that could, you know, he's got a ton of want. This horse has got, and I don't train him anymore, and Mr. Catalano does, and Wayne's a great horseman and doing well with him, and I still am a big fan of him, though. I watch him work and watch him train, and he'll never run that I don't support him and bet on him and stuff, because he's the right kind of horse. He overcomes and works hard and gives you a game.
You know, I always wondered about that. When a trainer loses a horse and the owner makes a decision to switch trainers or whatever the situation might be, how closely do they continue to follow that horse? And Ron, it sounds like you're of the approach that, hey, if I have a good horse and I've done some good things with him, I want to cheer for him as we go forward.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, it for me, if an owner moves a horse from me, I'm going to still follow and root for the horse. That has nothing to do. My relationship with the horse is completely different to my relationship from the owner. I get along with Harry, and he and I are still friends and everything. He's doing business with somebody else, and our business has exploded. We're doing the right kind of business. I want everybody to be happy, but my relationship with that horse supersedes my relationship with that owner, and I will be a fan of that horse no matter what, for the effort he gave me and for the sacrifices he made in doing what he did. He's always going to have a spot in my heart, no matter what.
Yeah, and when you take a horse like that that's so young, when you get him and you develop him into something, you know, that runs second to American Pharoah, I mean, you got to have, you know, admiration for the horse, and I totally agreed. I got fired many times, just like all trainers. Eddie Gregson once said, there's two kinds of trainers, those that have been fired and those that are going to get fired. And and we all know what that's like. But especially when it's a good horse. I mean, you know, if it's a claiming horse or something, you don't mind so much. But I mean, when you lose a good horse, it's a blow to your whole operation. I mean, your help's down and you're down, and you know, it's always tough to lose a nice horse.
Oh sure, yeah, and you know, what you do is, you know, being the coach or the eternal optimist, you wake up the next day and go try to find the next one. But no matter what, they always leave their hoof prints. And you know, we've got his name sprinkled through my history and all over my walls of my home because he deserves it. And no matter who trains him, he's always going to be a part of my horse, you know. And that's how I am. And if I ever change, I'll probably do something else for a living, because I was a fan of horses before I was a fan of horse racing. And I was a fan of individual horses before I ever even knew who a trainer was, you know. So at the end of the day, if you like horses, and I know that most shows are geared around gaming and gambling and pick fours and trifectas and all that stuff, but if you like horses, then it doesn't change when someone else gets them. You like that horse.
Ron, I told the story when you joined us in 2012 that you were one of the very first trainers that I had the chance to meet when I was working with Barb Borden in Horse ID at Keeneland years ago. And I can tell you, you're still the same person today that you were even back then. But considering all the success that you've been able to have since joining us on that program in 2012 and the Kentucky Derby appearances, which we'll talk more about, the Breeders' Cup appearances, what's different about Ron Moquette now as a trainer as opposed to back in 2012?
I think, you know, you've heard the old joke, the feeding program gets better. And I think, I can't remember if it was Watchmaker, one of those really good reporters, asked Bob Baffert whenever he was trying to get to the Kentucky Derby, run second, I think, once with Cavaneer. And then the next time, a few years later, he's winning it, and he's winning it two times. And they ask him what changed from being, you know, having a long shot run second to now he's the favorite. And he said his feeding program. And they said, really, what does that mean? He said, I'm feeding better horses. And I always thought, you know, the passion is there, and there's a lot of really, really good horsemen in our business. But whenever you get a little bit of experience, I think the people, justifiably so, the smart guys, they wait a little bit and see how you're going to develop and what your temperament is and what your, you know, how do you work well with others and what, and obviously what you do with the horses. You know, we joked around that forever we didn't have business cards because we wanted we wanted people to ask whose horse that is, and they seek us out, because if they appreciate how good the horse looks in the paddock, then they're going to appreciate the job we do instead of using a win percentage to define how you are as a horseman. And I think that that's one of the things, is that we're feeding better horses because we have owners with more established careers buying and sending us horses.
Yeah, and you have such a great personality. You mentioned earlier how you like to joke around and stuff. You're one of the few trainers that more times than not you have a smile on your face than you're all somber. You know, sometimes you go to the paddock and it looks like you're at a funeral. And you wonder, what's wrong with these guys and gals? Why aren't they, you know, more pleased that what they get to do is train horses for a living? I mean, that's like, you know, a lot of people's dream come true. And you're the exact opposite. You're there, you're smiling, you're serious sometimes, and you got things to do. But for the most part, there's going to be some point in time in the paddock where you're going to see a smile on your face. And that's kind of rare.
Sure. Let me ask you guys this question. As somebody who's never trained a horse, this is 24/7, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. You don't get a day off when you're training racehorses. Is there any point when it can become a bit of a grind?
Oh, sure. But it's always, you know, the reward is worth it. No matter what. It's like having a kid. I mean, is there days that you want to just check out and say, go ask your mother, just stay away from me for a little bit? But at the end of the day, you wouldn't trade it for anything. And this sport is that way. I've had 7 texts with my barn while I'm doing this interview. The business don't stop just because there's something going on. I haven't seen a movie all the way through without stepping out in the hall at a movie theater in 7 or 8 years. And that's not going to change. I accept that, because my obligation is to the horses first. So I'm going to understand that, you know, maybe I don't get to see a movie, but my sport, my job is so hard and so cumbersome and so bad that I've got people that will set their vacation time up to come watch me do it. Now, who does that?
That's a great,
you know,
point.
What I'm saying? I know we get caught up in our own world and we get mad. I mean, 4 o'clock comes the same time every day, but I've got friends and people that will sit there. They'll take off 2 weeks from their job to come spend and hang out with me doing mine. So my job can't be that bad. There's going to be, there's a coach friend of mine from Greenwood, Arkansas that is a very good coach, and he's very tied into his deal. And he drives to Louisville, wakes up in the morning, shows up, goes to the barn with me, watches me check legs, and thinks it's the best thing in the world. So how could I be mad about that, or say how cumbersome it is, without also appreciating that I'm very lucky to get to do it?
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, the 4 o'clock thing, you don't even think about it anymore. And most of the time, you cannot wait. People can't believe it, but you cannot wait to get to the barn in the morning. When the alarm goes off, if it even does, you know, I would wake up without the alarm. I still wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, even though I haven't trained a horse in 20 years, but you just cannot wait to get to the barn. It's like the greatest feeling on earth to want to rush to work. Most people have that.
Yeah, and it's fun. It's like, you know, when I walk, there's a horse we have named Mean Bone. He's an Arkansas bred. They're never going to write a story about Mean Bone, right? But Mean Bone has been in my barn for 4 years, and he's a cool horse, and he's got the personality that is he's just one of those horses that grab you. And I don't care who you are, he grabs you, because he's sweet, he's kind, he's funny. There's no telling what kind of antics he's going to pull, and he's always right beside whoever the big horse is. And the reason is that Mean Bone, when you walk in the stall, he starts screaming for food. When you walk in the shed row, so I come in that direction, he's the second stall I see. And before I can even get out of my truck and walk to the barn, he knows I'm coming. He starts whinnying and screaming and whatever. And it's just comical. You start your day off with, you know, if he was a horse, he would be Kramer on Seinfeld. or if he was a human. But it's funny that he starts yelling at me before I even get there. And it's always, you know, so it's funny, I'll be brushing my teeth or whatever, and thinking about, well, Mean Bone's probably ready to start screaming at me. And that's the kind of stuff that I like. If they ever told me that I couldn't go to a barn and, hey, we're going to put you with a really successful group, and but you're not going to be able to go to the barn, and you're going to make a lot of money, but you can't touch horses and you can't have that relationship, then I probably would enjoy it and wouldn't do it. But that's the stuff that makes you get up early and want to go.
Visiting with trainer Ron Moquette here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Coming up to our first commercial break of the program in about 3 minutes from right now, Ronnie. I love that you talk about the personality of a horse like Mean Bones. And there are people listening that might not realize that there are horses, much like humans, that have different personality traits. And it has to be awesome for a trainer to discover those as they begin to train them.
Oh, that's one of the things that was also so cool about American Pharoah, is that whenever everything's said and done and people are 30 years from now writing stories about American Pharoah, they're going to always mention his temperament, is that he was so smart, so classy, so even keel, so kind. Anybody could walk him. Anybody could go up and take a picture with him. And that's a rarity. A lot of these horses are all business. They're territorial. They're male dominant. They're, you know, aggressive, some of them. And, you know, but with especially the better ones. And when you get a horse like that, it's pretty, that makes his mark on being, you know, very cool, to where anyone can walk up and pet it without losing a limb. That's pretty neat. And, you know, we joke around that we've got horse, you know, Whitmore is probably one of my better horses that I have. And he's very cool to a certain extent. He'll let you do what you need to do, and you can check his legs. But if you hang out and you think you're going to hang out and love on him a little bit, you're going to see you're wrong. He's going to run you out of there and try to kill you. That's just his personality. But and then you got, you know, other horses that would let you sit there and pet on them all day. And they may not be as good a racehorse, or they may even be better, but they're, you know, each one of them has their own temperament and their own personality and their own idiosyncrasies. And that's the fun part. That's the part that keeps every day young.
Yeah. When you said anybody could walk them, our friend Larry Colmus, he went back to the barn one day and Baffert handed him the shank and said, give him a couple rounds. And Larry was like freaking out, you know, but he tells that story all the time. It was like one of the highlights of his life, walking that horse a couple rounds around the toe ring. And he was a really cool horse.
Yeah. That's something that you can't do. And, you know, I promise you this, try that with Bucci Pegasus. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if you don't think it's a rarity, you know, go over there and snuggle up to Silver Ghost. Those guys, you know, these horses are all different personalities, and usually the alphas, the ones that are that fast and that, they're usually not that kind. And I bet you I know 10 separate people that have that same story that Larry told you. You know, one of the guys here is a racing manager at Oakland named David Longinati. He's, you know, he lost his leg, and he's got a fake leg. So he's coming up to, and of course he's a fan of American Pharoah, and American Pharoah is down in the stall. And Bob said, did you want to go down there and take a picture with him? He said, yeah, sure. He said, okay. Handed him the shank, said, go get him. You know, David has been with Oakland a long time and in racing his whole life, but he's not a horseman. He doesn't know one. I mean, you know, that's not his forte. But he was able to go down and put a shank on and bring American Pharoah out. This is after the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, it's a great story.
I mean, no offense to David, but I wouldn't let him do that with any horse, not even my pony. But yet, American Pharoah was so kind, and Bob, of course, knew the personality. And he wouldn't have done that if he didn't know for absolute certain that everything was going to be okay. But that's what makes these guys cool athletes and cool. You know, it's such a cool sport, is you've got these subtle differences on all of them.
Yeah, great story, and more great stories ahead from trainer Ron Moquette as we continue right after this commercial break. You're listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Make plans now to attend the Fasig Tipton Kentucky Winter Mix Sale February 5th and 6th at the Fasig Tipton Sales Grounds on Newtown Pike in Lexington, Kentucky. And nominations are now being accepted for the 2018 Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale, being held at Gulfstream Park in Hallandale Beach, Florida on March 28th. You can nominate to this premier two-year-old and training sale by visiting FasigTipton.com. That's FasigTipton.com. Where will you be?
Plume Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Plume, Plume Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Plume Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at PlumeRacing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Ross O'Brien, what a finish to the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Here comes Whitmore with his run. He is three wide, and Whitmore's on the move. Black Bear trying to go with him. We have another new leader, and this time it's the favorite, Whitmore, and he takes charge. He's a length and a half in front of Holy Boss from the outside, Mo Candy, but Whitmore comes to the final 16, drifts out just a bit, but he's got lengths to work with. Here is Whitmore. Yes! Whitmore wins the 44th Count Fleet Sprint Handicap by 4.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna and Jude Feld in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. Vic Stauffer had the call of last year's Count Fleet Sprint Handicap at Oaklawn. That was back on April 15th of 2017. Whitmore dominating that afternoon for trainer Ron Moquette and part of a tremendous Oaklawn meeting. He's hoping to build on that momentum and have an even bigger 2018 coming up as that meet kicks off on Friday in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Want to remind you that if you missed any portion of the first half of the program and our visit with Ron Moquette, all you have to do is go to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this program and all of our shows at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes, your home for all of our podcasts. Whitmore, what an awesome horse he was, huh?
Oh, he's fantastic. Yeah.
He still is.
Still around.
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. I took the best picture of him at Pimlico from the roof as he was flying by everybody. He's one of my favorites. I love him.
He would go on and win the Phoenix Stakes at Keeneland as well. That's a grade two. And, of course, trained by our special guest tonight, Ron Moquette, who is with us on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Ronnie, that win in the Count Fleet was part of a tremendous 2017 Oaklawn meet for you. As a matter of fact, when you look up the standings from last year, you were second in the standings behind only Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen in terms of earnings, but you're about $1.1 million behind him. How do you make that up this year?
Boy, I don't know. He's basically like Kentucky basketball. He reloads with these blue chip guys and he's puts the rest of the world at a disadvantage because he's very smart and he's very good horseman and got the utmost respect. And you know, I tell everyone, I try to beat my record. That's what I try to do every year. I just want to improve on me because you know my third quarter might not be the same as someone else's third quarter. So I know this, that from what I see on the track, and it's going to be hard for anyone to beat Steve Asmussen at this meet. I can tell you that I'll try really, really hard to be competitive, but he looks like he's got a lot of really nice horses coming up.
Yeah, and sometimes it's a numbers game too. I mean, he's got a lot more horses to choose from than everybody else, and he's really good at shipping them around to tracks where they can win. So if he sees a good spot, you know, he can do it. Plus, he can kill you at the claiming box. He'll take his own money and claim some horse and win 5-6 races with it, you know, like breaking sticks.
Oh, sure. He's very smart, and there's a reason he has the success he has. It's because he's super intelligent, and he works. He's a very hard worker, and I've got a lot of respect for him. You know, I'm lucky enough that I get to compete with and be friends with a lot of these guys, and I'm lucky that he's one of my friends. But he's definitely going to take a lot of hard work and you know, good luck just to stay close to, because like you said, the numbers are huge, and he knows what to do with them. So it's not like a guy with a lot of really good horses that doesn't play the game right. He plays it very smart, and he'll be tough. The other deal is that I joke around with people about gambling. They say, hey, well, who should I bet on early, and what's some trends at Oaklawn? I've got a friend of mine from Saratoga that says, man, I get murdered at Oaklawn every year. How can I make money at Oaklawn? I said, well, one of the main things that I tell people that I, you know, because different people have good horses every year. Randy Morse may have a good horse this year and then may not have as good a horse next year. And Lucas may have a Will Take Charge this year and maybe have a down year. But one thing I know for sure is the consistencies and the knowns. You know, at the beginning of the meet, Asmussen doesn't go as hard. And at the end of the meet, he does whatever it takes for him to win the meet. So if you are gambling, I'm always a little bit more, you know, interested as I am late as I am early at the Oaklawn meet for him. But if he's behind by 8 wins or something with 2 weeks to go, then just bet everything Asmussen. he will come in, and we joke around here, we call it the blue fog when he starts unloading horses to make sure that he's leading. He brings in a really pretty, well-meant, well-cared-for horse that's perfectly spotted, and that's you got to beat it. So that's one of the trends I tell everybody is bet Asmussen late. So
Ron Whitmore is a horse that brought you to the Kentucky Derby in 2016. Of course, you were there the year before with Far Right as well. How about the 2 year or the 3-year-olds this year from the Moquette Barn? Are there a couple we can keep an eye on, and might we see you beneath the Twin Spires with them?
You know, with, you know, God willing and good luck, I do have some horses with ability, and now we have to have everything go right, you know, to get to the Kentucky Derby. I read somewhere someone said that you had to have a lot of really good days and absolutely no bad ones. And I have some horses that if everything goes right and we have a lot of really good days, could develop into that kind of horse. I've got quite a few. This year it seems like we've got some more fillies that are nicer, some well-bred, well-meant fillies. But the boys that I have I have a boy named Wisdom and War that's a really nice horse. Looks like he's going to be, he's a son of Flatter, which I like those. That's what Petrov was, like West Coast. And he's got a really neat way of moving. I've got a horse for Mr. Lee Long that's a Tappet coat that looks like he's going to be a good horse when the distances stretch out. His name is Lighthawk. He'll be a nice horse. And then we've got a couple others that are, you know, look like they're right on the fringe. And of course, you got to get through your maiden race and go compete well and go from this other stuff. But I've got some talented horses.
What's it like to saddle a horse in the Kentucky Derby?
It's surreal. It's bigger than it. That race is so hyped up, and it's so, you know, you grow up hearing about it, and that's usually the only race when you're in Pocola, Oklahoma, or Fort Smith, Arkansas. That was the only race that was on TV. And you see that race, and then one day you're saddling in it, you realize that at the time you're competitive and you're trying to make sure that you've done everything right. This horse has the right equipment. Did I lead him to the race the right way? And is the handler doing the right job? And how's he going to handle the crowd? And the crowd is crazy. it's the only crowd I've been to that you can feel. It's not, I don't know how to describe it unless you walk over with the horse, but you actually feel it like you ever felt the bass off of a speaker. That's what it feels like when you come over. And it's very cool. It's very cool. It's people that don't know you at all will come up and tell you about your horse because of how coverage and hyped it is. So it's a neat deal. And if you're in this sport, you need to do that. You need to want to do that. And if you've never been to the Kentucky Derby, I tell everyone you need to go because I can't explain it. I'm not a good enough wordsmith to put in description the exact feeling that it is to saddle a horse in it. And I can't even imagine what it'd be like to win it. I mean, it'd have to be crazy, but it's what you work for.
Yeah, I know that feeling, not from the Derby, but sometimes it's overwhelming, that thumping. It's like inside of you, and it almost takes your breath away, huh?
Oh yeah, and it's I've been lucky enough to be around a lot of really successful people in all types of areas of their life, whether it be, you know, football players or actors or coaches or hedge fund leaders or businessmen and governors and all these different people, and they tell me the same thing. They all unanimously say the same thing. I've never felt anything that felt like that. And if people knew it, if it was a drug, it would, you know, there'd be an epidemic.
Yeah, if we could bottle that and market it,
yeah,
it would be so easy to sell the sport of thoroughbred racing, because that's what this sport at its core is all about. It's those moments that are somewhat intangible that you have a hard time putting into words, but you have to be there. And once you experience it, this is a sport that, Ronnie, very quickly can get into your blood.
Oh, yeah. You know, the old saying is, once you step in it, you're in it, you know, and it don't come off. But I am always the guy that'll be willing to let somebody come stand in the paddock with me or go come to the barn, because it's not because I want you to bet on the horses or want you to be a part of the business. I want you to feel what it feels like. And if you don't like that feeling after that, then this isn't for you, and you're odd, and you need to go do something else. Maybe go, I don't know, pay twiddle sticks or something. But this is the coolest sport that you can get involved with, because there's so many different areas of connection. There's so many different ways to win. And I think I always joke around with my guys, and I'm on several committees and boards and stuff now. We sell the horse wrong. We sell horse racing wrong. We sell it attached to gaming. And I know that gaming or gambling is a big part of whatever, but we've proven over and over that people love the horses and love the sport as much as the necessity part of it, which is the gambling. And if they could fall in love with the horse and just get to know what it feels like to lose when you thought you'd win, and get to know what it feels like to win when you thought you'd win, they would understand why everybody gets so hung up on it. And if you can introduce them to that feeling, it trumps hitting a winning trifecta by tenfold, and it's permanent. It's not temporary.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And you're like one of the first people that's ever been on this program that's brought that up. I think that's outstanding. And I feel the same way. I think it's really cool what Wayne does down there at Oaklawn, where he finds kids and invites them to the winner's circle so they have that experience.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's funny is we all start – he started it, and then we, you know, like our sport is more of a copycat sport than NFL football, I promise you. If one guy wins a race with a Blue Shadow Roll, all of a sudden Blue Shadow Roll sell out the next day. But we see Wayne doing that, and I went up and asked him, and he said, Ron, I'll tell you this, I've been doing it for a while. And he said, I had a 19-year-old kid come up to me and say he brought like 10 of his college friends with him. And he said, do you remember me? And Wayne said, no. I mean, you know how Wayne's got a great way of speaking. He can say something that should offend you, and it don't. Because he's smart, you know. I haven't mastered that. But he said, no, I have no idea who you are, you know. And he said, well, you took me in the wind picture at Ellis Park or at Turfway Park, and I've got it. I've had it in my, you know, that has been hanging in my bedroom for years. And, you know, he made a fan, and that fan – that fan showed show how cool the sport was to other people who become potential fans. And all because he was doing something that he was going to do anyways, but he included someone else in it. And it was really cool. I think it's a good idea. I hope everybody does it. We started it. We've tried to mimic that a little. But I think that you're doing them a favor, showing them how cool it is to follow a horse. And that's what that did. He said that the kid is now a fan of horse racing, but he's a fan of Dwayne Lucas. And now I think the horse that he was following was maybe Grindstone.
Wow.
One of those like that. There, maybe it was Tabasco Cat or Grindstone or one of them. But anyways, and then now he follows grandsons of Grindstone. So that shows you how they imprint.
Visiting with trainer Ron Moquette here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ron, you've talked or mentioned names like Bob Baffert and Steve Asmussen and now Dwayne Lucas, and I know you have the utmost respect for all of those gentlemen and all the trainers that you have the opportunity to go to work with every day. But is there one trainer, past or present, that if you could emulate them, that would be the person that you said, okay, this is who I want to be like for whatever reason?
That's a tricky question because there's different areas. You know, I like different people for different things, and I'm too much of a fan of the sport to not like somebody for the way they interact with people and not care so much as the way they interact with horses or love how their honesty is with the public. And, you know, I mean, I think there's some really, really different reasons to like a lot of different people. We lost a great horseman, this week with Jack Van Berg, but we lost a really neat guy and a great horseman last year with Lynn Whiting. And I really liked the way he did things. He was honest. He was well-respected everywhere he went. He spoke in racetrack riddle. You didn't understand him if you didn't come from the track. But he was one of the cool guys. And if somebody told me that you had to sign up for somebody's career and the way you're respected and the way that you handled yourself right now, then it would probably be him because of the way that he was respected from his kids to people that he just interacted with every day and how he did with horses. And then I love the way that certain people do certain things. Like Randy Morris, I think, is a really good horseman. I see him a lot, so I get the privilege of seeing just how good he takes care of horses. And I think Steve Asmussen's super smart. Nick Zito is a passionate guy and he's very successful. I love how Bill Mott, his calm demeanor. I got things I like about different people. And so the answer to that is I like a lot of different people, but I want to beat them.
So. Well, it has to be great for a kid, you know, who grew up in Arkansas and started going to Blue Ribbon Downs to all of a sudden find yourself in the winner's circle against a guy like Nick Zito or Dwayne Lucas or Bill Mott. That has to be a special feeling.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But you got to understand, you're there to beat them, and you can appreciate it and everything. And I do. I really did. I mean, I got to ship in this year to the Breeders' Cup. I'm in Richard Mandela's barn, and you know, I grew up watching that. I mean, and then get to be in his barn and see firsthand how he does things and the professionalism he has and the interaction with the horses. I mean, it's crazy. And you got to understand that don't let the moment be bigger than you, but appreciate it. And don't ever be so focused on trying to get to where you're going that you don't look up and think to yourself, holy crap, I am in Richard Mandela's barn at Del Mar Park. That's a big deal for me. And so I do that.
Ron, so many trainers have told us on this program that they don't like to look back. They always like to look ahead. And that's a pretty easy answer. But do you ever, when you're alone, just sit there and look back on some of the things you've been able to accomplish and where you started and where you are today? Is that ever part of your life in any way?
Yeah, I mean, I do things called where I do themes for the year. And basically what that is, that's to keep you focused on moving ahead. But I also, I have a TV setting up in whatever office I'm in, that it'll show the replays of the winning races that I had the year before. So sometimes whenever you ran a horse that you thought would win and it run, you know, subpar, or you're having a bad day, or you lose an owner, or you lost a horse that got moved from you or whatever, sometimes it's good to look at the success you had last year to realize that it can be attained again if you work hard enough. So I do look back and appreciate that. And it's funny, a lot of the racetrack is round and everything comes around and goes around, right? Well, it's funny that when I was at Blue Ribbon Downs, one of the guys that was the announcer was Vic Stauffer. And now he's an announcer at Oakland. So you can't help but look back on stuff. And one of the first announcers I ever had at Churchill was Luke Kriposh, and he was an announcer at Blue Ribbon Downs. So it's funny that you can move on and go around the track, but it seems like you're always, you know, your path is always catching up, and you get a chance to review it and appreciate it.
Yeah, be back where you started. Yeah, Mike was, when you were telling that story about your television, Mike was grinning because he knows there's one particular race. I won the California Oaks, and Larry Colmus called the race, and I've told Larry a couple times when Mike's been there that when I used to have a down day or a losing streak, I'd put that tape on and watch Freya Stark run around there and win the California Oaks. It was a grade 3 $200,000 race, and that used to remind me that I still knew how to train horses. I just had to find some better ones.
That's right. That's right. It's and you know, our game is, that's what I said, that a lot of stuff is when it's controlled by the gambling narrative instead of the fan narrative, instead of the horse. You know, I've won several races in a row and been feeling like we was doing very well, and then we go out there and you're 9-1 and you think that you're going to run well, and the same fan that told you how awesome and smart you was standing there lining up to tell you how dumb you are. And so at some point you got to, you know, look back on what you've accomplished and understand that man, we won the Count Fleet, you know, that was a pretty good deal, and we won the Phoenix. That's one of the oldest races in the sport, and this is a race that we grew up wanting to win. And you know, there's certain races, and one of my themes this year is I want to win certain races at certain places, and I don't care about win percentage. I think that's the most stupid thing in the world. It doesn't. They try to use mathematics and facts without giving you all the facts. A number doesn't, just a number that what you did yesterday has no bearing on what you're going to do today if you have a different horse. So, but it's fun to have those certain horses that you remember and those certain races. If you go and you win the Ben Ali or the Phoenix or the you know, the Hollywood Gold Cup or whatever, no one asks what was your win percentage the day you won that? Never. What was your ROI off the layoff the day that you won that?
I love this guy. I absolutely love this guy.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, and there's a difference between trainers and horsemen. And Ron Moquette, our guest here on Trainer Talk, obviously a horseman. And Ron, I'm sure you would agree with that statement, that there are trainers and there are people that are horsemen, and percentages are irrelevant.
Yeah, that's what I told someone. They said the other day, there's certain people, and there's a group of people that's in our industry that – they'll say another win for high percentage, first off the claim, so-and-so, or whoever it is. And I'm like, okay, you give us some math there. That's great. But any first-year math student can tell you where you start from and figuring out a math problem is you go to what's known. So, and then you figure out the rest for the equation, right? So if it is that they're giving you this number like it's what's known, but the problem is, yes, they are 35% first off the claim, but they're only 7% first off the claim if they raise it up. Today, this horse is being raised up, and you're given this number like, well, he wins this. Well, you're given the number, and it is, in a word, accurate, but it's not completely accurate. So this might, if they're 7% the first time they raise a horse, and they're 35% the first time usually, well, that tells you that today they're back to 7%, but I don't see that number there. So as a gambling guy, I think it's misleading, and it's misfortunate, and it gives people that the wrong impression of things. I think you need to go there and look at a horse and see how it is. And, you know, there's some great horsemen out here that's doing great things, but they never get the opportunity because there's a number. Yesterday's number defines them. And I don't think that's a good deal. I've had, you know, 12% and 11% and 9% and did some of the absolute best training jobs I ever did in my life, even more so than having a horse that I thought could win for maiden 30 that I put in for maiden 20 to guarantee that he'd win. So I think that we should work on changing the narrative a little bit. And, if anytime someone says that, they're in risk of someone ridiculing them, saying, well, that's because you have a low win percentage. No, it's because my focus is on making money and not winning races. I want to win the right races and get the most out of the horses. And there's a lot of people out there that's like me that don't worship a number. And then there's some people that don't know as much about developing a horse and doing the, you know, taking a, I was proud of Far Right being a cheap horse that nobody knew who he was and whatever, and doing as well as we did and making the money we did. But there's a lot of people that would have never given me the opportunity because I was probably about 12% that year.
Yeah. Ron Moquette.
I hope that we change that a little bit.
Here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. All right, Ronnie, only about two and a half minutes left before we have to wrap up the show. So we like to end the program with a little segment that we call Five Fast Facts to Know About Ron Moquette. So I'm going to ask you five quick questions. You'll answer them very quickly, and we'll let people know a little something about you that maybe they didn't before. You ready?
All right.
All right. Are you a window or an aisle guy?
Aisle.
Aisle, okay. Your favorite food?
Chocolate gravy.
What? Chocolate gravy. I don't know what that is, but it sounds pretty good.
It's a southern thing.
You mentioned you've run into some different celebrities over the years. The celebrity that you've met that you're never going to forget?
Prince.
Ooh, that's a good one. Favorite thing to do outside of racing would be what?
I watch high school sports.
Any particular sport?
Football and basketball.
All right. And your number one goal for 2018?
Do better.
That's all you can ask for. Do your best and, as they say, forget the rest, right?
Right.
That's Trainer Ron Moquette here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Ronnie, look, I know it's going to be a chilly start to Oaklawn this weekend. Bundle up, and if they run, get hot, stay hot, man.
Thank you very much. Great. Thank you guys so much for what you're doing, for having me on.
Appreciate it, Ronnie. Thanks so much. Ron Moquette with us here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That was a great show.
We could have gone another hour, right?
Yeah. Oh, I have a whole list of questions I want to ask.
We'll bring them back on for part three before too long.
Right.
Simply sensational. And good luck to Ronnie. Our thanks to Ron Moquette for being with us here tonight. Our thanks to our producer, Lee Delapina, here in our Jimmy John's of Lexington studio, pushing all the right buttons. For Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We will talk to you next time right here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Thanks for listening.